We're going to go on to the last case of the day. And that case is 043193, Claire versus Illinois Education Association. Morning.
Good afternoon, Your Honor. May
Good
it please
afternoon.
The court? Unfortunately, it is, yes. May it please the court, counsel. My name is David Stevens, and I represent the plaintiff and appellant, Barbara Claire, in this matter, which will decide if the district court's hyper-technical interpretation of her complaint supports dismissal with prejudice at this early stage. I will, of course, argue that it does not, on both procedural and substantive grounds, and ask this court to reverse the judgment of the district court and remand this cause for further proceedings. Barbara began her complaint with a section entitled Parties, and in that section she named and identified four defendants: the IEA, the Illinois Education Association, the NEA, the National Education Association, the IEA Unified Legal Services Plan, and the Kate Frank / Duchesne United Legal Services Program.
Now, did you ever ask for leave from the court below to amend your complaint to add the IES Unified Services Plan as a defendant in count three?
No, Your Honor, we did not. So then
haven't you waived the right to seek leave to file?
We're not arguing in this court that we're seeking leave to file an amended complaint, although it would be appropriate if the cause is remanded that we do so at the district court. What we're alleging is that we have named four defendants. Perhaps through inadvertence, we did not name one of those defendants as a particular respondent in count three. But all four were named as defendants. And in count three, Barbara specifically named this Kate Frank / Duchesne Unified Legal Services Program, despite having already earlier named the IEA Unified Legal Services Plan as a defendant. The district court seized upon this apparent oversight and determined that there could be no set of facts proven that would entitle Barbara to relief.
Was there any discovery on the issue of whether the Frank Duchesne program was an ERISA plan? Did you ask for any discovery on that point?
Judge, there was no time for discovery in this matter. This was
at
a
all.
Motion to dismiss,
yeah.
And a motion and supporting documents were submitted, a response was filed, and the court made its ruling.
Okay. No
and
discovery order, nothing.
There wasn't time in this case for
okay.
that to go forward. The court found that this Kate Frank Duchesne Legal Services Program, which was the only defendant that was that it considered in this motion to dismiss, did not constitute a welfare benefit program under ERISA because it was not established or maintained for the purpose of providing prepaid legal services to participants or beneficiaries. And in making that determination, it very strictly construed that phrase, personal legal services, by using an Internal Revenue Service definition. Now, opposing counsel and all of the defendants admit that there is no standard definition for what amounts to a prepaid legal services plan under ERISA. Under the Internal Revenue Service, it says that legal services are related to real estate, wills, consumer protection, domestic relations, and traffic violations. This is under Internal Revenue Service guidelines. Also, the court found that the fifth element of an ERISA plan was also not in place because this Kate Duchesne Legal Services Program did not provide benefits to individual participants, but rather to state affiliates only in employment matters. Your Honor, Federal Rule of Civil Procedure 8A2 provides that a complaint must include only a short and plain statement of the claim showing that the pleader is entitled to relief. And according to the United States Supreme Court in Conley versus Gibson in 1957, such a statement must simply give the defendant fair notice of what the plaintiff's claim is and the grounds upon which it rests. We have that in this case.
Well, let me ask you this. Can you suggest any other authoritative definition of prepaid legal services other than what was provided by the Internal Revenue Code that you cited?
No, Your Honor. There is not, to my knowledge, a definition in case law or statute or administrative regulation that fits the ERISA definition. The court was simply grasping at straws at this point.
And there was no other suggestion that you made as to how that should be defined. I recognize that that was the only thing that was used, and we don't have any authority. But you didn't suggest any other definition.
There was no other definition available. But what we did suggest, Your Honor, was that the provision of prepaid legal services for employment matters, which is what the IEA, NEA plans were involved with, qualifies as prepaid personal legal services. To say that litigation regarding one's employment is not personal legal service, or that is providing counsel for litigation for one's employment status is not personal legal program under ERISA, is contradictory and makes very little sense. And yet that's what the district court did in this case. It narrowly defined prepaid personal legal services to those things that I mentioned. Under those circumstances, it was correct in making its determination. If that's what prepaid personal legal services are, employment services do not count. But such a restriction is far too narrow under these circumstances. The other provisions of the federal rules are inextricably linked to Rule 8A's simplified notice pleading standard. Rule 8E1, for example, states that no technical form of pleading or motions are required. And significantly, Rule 8F provides that all pleading shall be so construed so as to do substantial justice. Our simple statement in this case is that construing so narrowly the pleading in this case does not do substantial justice. The party was named as a defendant. Counts 1 and 2 were appended state claims based on contract. It was count 3 that was the federal jurisdictional claim. If the court had determined that both the IEA plan and the NEA program were included in count 3, and if it had examined the status of the IEA plan, it would have determined that the IEA plan is, in fact, included under the definitions for ERISA. Now, whether a plan is governed by ERISA is a question of law for the district court to decide. We don't oppose that at all. And according to statute and this court, an ERISA benefit plan consists of 5 elements, and those 5 elements are laid out in my brief. That's 29 U.S.C. section 1002, subsection 1, and a 1986 case, Miniat Inc. versus Globe Life Insurance Group, Inc. Program has to satisfy all 5 elements, and the district court found that there were 2 elements that the NEA program did not take care of. The NEA plan apparently funds the state plans, and the state plans apparently fund the individuals. So if the court was correct that the NEA plan did not fund individuals as is required under ERISA, then it was right to dismiss as to that plan in count 3. But it should also have considered whether the IEA plan did, and if it had done so, it would have found that it fits the elements of ERISA. Now, the interpretation and the opinion of the agency charged with the administrative statute constitute a body of
experience. Let me just make sure I'm clear on that. You're saying that the IEA plan was paid directly to individuals.
That is correct, Your Honor.
I just wanted to make sure that's okay.
Yes. Now, according to the United States Supreme Court in 1944 in Skidmore versus Swift and Company, the interpretation and opinion of agencies charged with administering an administrative statute constitute a body of experience and informed judgment to which courts and litigants may properly resort for guidance. And in this case, the Department of Labor is the portion of the government that is charged with taking care of these matters. And in a case that I've cited extensively in my brief, Advisory Opinion 94-25A, dated July 11th of 1994, the Department of Labor looked at a welfare benefit program remarkably similar to this one and found that, in fact, it qualified under ERISA. It had to do with the Airline Pilots Association, and one of the important things that the Department of Labor looked at were brochures advertising that welfare benefit plan. In this case, there were brochures from both the IEA plan and the NEA program that were attached to the pleadings and to some memoranda that were filed later on. In making its determination, the court did not even bother to examine these brochures. If it had, it would have found that both of these brochures lead members reasonably to conclude that the insurance programs were established and maintained by the employee organization. That's what's necessary under the Department of Labor determination.
Well, are these brochures even complete? These don't purport to be the plans.
No, Your Honor, they don't purport to be the plans.
We're not that far along here.
That's correct. But The Department of Labor looked at brochures in the airline pilot case and determined that a reasonable person looking at those brochures would conclude that they were part of a welfare benefit plan that they were entitled to. We have a similar situation in this case. And recall, this is a situation where the district court dismissed with prejudice very early in the process.
Well, that's my point. We don't have the plan document, so how can we determine whether this is an employee benefit plan
without the plan documents? I believe the plan documents were submitted by defendants in this matter, not initially, but as part of the motion to dismiss. And part of their argument, I believe, will be based upon that. I will save the rest of my time for rebuttal at this time. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, Mr. Lowenstein.
Good afternoon. Just to begin, I'd like to correct 3 points. First of all, the plans were submitted as part of our motion to dismiss, so those are part of the record. Secondly, the plaintiff in this case has admitted at 2 places, on page 8 of their brief and on page 5 of their reply brief, that the only party who was named as a defendant here was the Deschene plan. Third, I forgot.
Okay, well then, I'll ask you a question. The court went outside the pleadings to determine if the Frank Deschene program was an ERISA plan. And since there wasn't any discovery allowed on the issue, shouldn't we vacate and remand for discovery and a hearing on any disputed facts about the program?
Thank you for reminding me of my third point. My third point was that there was discovery in this case. We submitted hundreds of pages of materials as part of our voluntary disclosure or required disclosure, and there were depositions taken by the plaintiff of 2 of the potential witnesses in this case. In addition to that, the Deschene plan is a part of the record here because we submitted it as part of our motion to dismiss, which the district court found was an appropriate way of pleading the case if the plaintiff doesn't submit it as part of their attachments. So that is part of the record. We did cite to that as part of our argument and part of our written memorandum, and we've cited to that again in our brief. So I believe the record is complete here.
You submitted all the plan documents and deposition testimony?
No. We did not submit the deposition testimony. We submitted the plan documents as part of our motion to dismiss. There was discovery in this case. There was the disclosure which we're required to make, which consisted of hundreds of pages of documents, and there were depositions taken by the plaintiff.
How does that all happen before the filing of a motion to dismiss in lieu of a responsive pleading?
The motion to dismiss was filed in this case. Mm-hmm. There was a substantial amount of time between the time that the motion to dismiss was filed and a decision was made by the district court. During that period of time, discovery proceeded because we were on timelines to complete certain elements of the discovery. So that was going forward as the motion to dismiss was being considered. The disclosure, of course, was made initially when the pleadings were filed. And as I say, we submitted hundreds of pages of documents in response to our obligation to submit documents.
Does that make this a motion for summary judgment then?
Well, I suppose the court could consider it as a motion for summary judgment, but really it's a legal issue of whether or not this is an ERISA plan. And we believe that it is not an ERISA plan under the documents before the court in terms of the complaint and the motion to dismiss.
But there are different legal standards that apply, so
that's
why,
right,
I'm asking.
That's correct. There are different legal standards, and we believe that the district court properly granted a motion to dismiss because this is not an ERISA plan. The district court had the plan before it. They used that plan to make a determination, and there are 2 elements under this court's decision in the Adminiat versus the Globe Insurance Company case that were not met here for an employee welfare benefit plan. They didn't meet the requirement for a prepaid legal services plan. they didn't meet the requirement that the benefits are payable to participants and beneficiaries.
What reason would there be to use the IRS regulations?
It's the only definition available.
If ERISA doesn't limit the term, why should we? I mean, legal services related to employment would seem to qualify as an ERISA benefit, wouldn't they?
No, we believe that the prepaid legal services, just like the definition in the IRS code in Section 120B, means something broader than that. It means personal legal services, which would be such things as family matters, consumer disputes.
The IRS definition doesn't say that.
No, it says personal legal services.
No, it doesn't. It says prepaid legal services.
Prepaid legal services.
The personal part of it comes in the NEA documents, and the references to wills and domestic matters and the rest of it is all part of the NEA documents. So why should we use that as a basis to define the statutory term? That makes no sense.
Well, excuse me, Your Honor. The IRS definition does talk about specific benefits being paid for personal legal services.
Yes, but the IRS tries to define taxable income. In ERISA, what the legislature was trying to do was to... God only knows, actually. But I think they were trying to unify litigation about employee benefits.
Your Honor, even if you don't agree that the IRS definition of prepaid legal services applies, the benefits under this plan were still not payable to participants and beneficiaries. Those terms are defined in ERISA, and the benefits under the Deschain plan are payable not to participants, not to beneficiaries, but to state affiliates.
But the brochure that was included by your adversary suggests services are provided to individuals and affiliates.
I think that those are referring to IEA legal services plans documents, but we've got the plan. We've got the plan as part of the record. We submitted that.
Were the IEA documents, you said you did a lot of pre-motion discovery and discovery during the pendency of the motion to dismiss. Were IEA documents submitted as well?
Yes.
And were the depositions related to IEA as well?
Yes, they were. And as a matter of fact, the IEA legal services plan is also part of the record here as part of the motion to dismiss submitted by the IEA.
And that plan does pay directly to plan participants.
Right.
That plan does pay directly to plan participants.
And if
however,
we construe count three broadly, which refers to defendants plural, the plaintiff gets past the motion.
No. Even if you make those kinds of assumptions, the IEA plan is actually over-inclusive. And under the that Wisconsin Education Association Trust case, the Eighth Circuit Appellate Court said that if the benefits are payable to other people in addition to members, in addition to participants or beneficiaries, such as affiliates, such as fee payers, which the IEA benefits, IEA legal services plans do cover, then it would be over-inclusive and therefore still not covered by ERISA.
This says the ULSP is a jointly sponsored NEA state affiliate legal assistance program designed to provide members and local affiliates with appropriate legal assistance in matters related to their employment, particularly regarding the defense of their job rights. It doesn't say designed to provide local affiliates. It says members and local affiliates.
Well, first of all, there are two separate plans. The Deschain plan is a separate plan from the IEA legal services plan.
Right, but the judge, Judge Bernthal, went outside the pleadings to determine if the Frank Deschain program was an ERISA plan, and we're dealing, we can talk about whether this is a motion for summary judgment, but it's certainly styled all along the way as a motion to dismiss.
Well, Your Honor, I don't think that the judge did go beyond the pleadings here because, as I say, we submitted, as was our right, in our motion to dismiss, a copy of the Duchesne plan. So they have the judge had that document.
How
the
is
judge
that not
read
going
that
outside
document.
The pleadings?
Pardon me?
How is that not going outside the pleadings?
If he consulted
hundreds of pages of documents.
No.
Apart
he
from
didn't.
The
no, he didn't consult hundreds of pages of documents. He consulted the Duchesne plan, which was attached to our motion to dismiss, which the court found was an appropriate way of pleading if the plaintiff had not submitted it as part of their complaint. That was part of our motion to dismiss. It was attached to our motion to dismiss, so the court did have that document. And that document clearly says that the benefits under the Duchesne program are payable to state affiliates, no one else. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Lowenstein. Mr. Stevens,
Judge, I believe my time
I'm going to give you a minute.
Thank you very much. I'll be very brief, Your Honor. I simply wish to respond to two things. Counsel suggests that the only defendant that we said in our brief and our reply brief was the Duchesne program. And in count three, that was the only defendant who was, in fact, named. But all four were named as defendants, including the IEA plan. The second thing that I'd like to respond to very briefly is the Eighth Circuit Wisconsin Education Association.
Could you finish that thought? But all four were named.
I'm sorry, yes, but all four were named as defendants in the complaint.
In counts one and two.
There was a section prior to any counts at all naming the party's defendant that named all four. Counts one and two were state law contract claims. Count three was the ERISA claim. And in count three, the only one of the four defendants who was named was the Duchesne program. But prior to count one or count two or count three being pleaded, all four were named as party's defendant.
In the title?
Not in the title, Judge. In the introductory material to the complaint. Uh-huh. It was a section labeled parties.
Okay. I have to go back.
And the other thing had to do with the Eighth Circuit's finding in Wisconsin Education Association. The Eleventh Circuit found contrary in Donovan versus Dillingham, and that case is distinguishable from this one on its fact. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you, our caboose case. And the case will be taken under advisement. And have a good trip back to Springfield and Mattoon.